This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You cool? I'm cool. You cool? I'm cool. You cool? I'm cool. We coolin' out. You cool? I'm cool. You cool? I'm cool. You cool? I'm cool. We coolin' out.
You got money.
Hit a couple licks, you know.
Okay. You know we're recording, right?
Huh?
Huh? Fans.
Hey, guys. I don't do that, Sal.
Man. Welcome back to another week of Cooling Out. We got our good friend, Katema. Damn, man.
Woo!
It's been a minute.
St. John's alumni.
What's going on?
The last time I saw you randomly on the J Train platform.
You did.
Well, you saw me. Scared the shit out of me. Yo, what's up, Drill? My bad, dude. I just knocked the
word. Scared the shit out of me.
I did.
Right on the Cypress Hills platform. I'm like, yo, I don't know.
He was looking so fancy. I had to bring him back, you know, to reality.
Yeah, no, I could have got robbed that day. man, how you been, man?
I'm all right. I just came back from my, you know, stressful ass job as a teacher. Mm. Kids wilding every day.
Mm. What grade you teach?
Fifth grade.
Oh, my mama teach fifth grade.
Fifth grade. It's like they're like not babies, but they're still assholes at this time. So, yeah, I can curse on this, right?
Yeah. Please. Yeah.
Fuck shit, damn.
Yeah, that's why I don't answer her calls on the weekday. I already know what she's talking about.
No.
Yeah.
No, like, I was just telling them today, some kid just, push the teacher and call their bitch.
What?
Mm. Yeah.
Facts.
Yeah. And now, and then we were talking about earlier, and they want teachers to have guns. Huh? Don't make no damn sense.
That'd be wild.
I would have, you know.
You push up. What? What's good? You gotta lift your shirt up. Like, what the fuck?
I'll put.
Repeat that.
What you said? Put the shit on the table.
Yeah.
You have a prop?
Exactly. You got a prop?
Yeah, exactly. That shit was dumb funny.
Hold on, wait. I'm sorry. Your dog did what to your homework?
Repeat that.
Oh man.
But yeah, I'm good. Just released my video last week.
Hero versus Lois.
Yes. Yes, I did. I'm actually really proud of that.
Yeah.
That wasn't the first time that I edited it. I like redid it from scratch. And I edited it all by myself. YouTube everything that I needed to do. Mm-hmm. And, like, I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna release it on my birthday. If people like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't.
No, tell the people what it is.
Let's just dive deep into it.
Okay, so Hero is a poem that I wrote about like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I like comic books, love comic books, and I noticed a parallel between my relationship with women and like superheroes. So
elaborate.
I will.
That was funny. Kevin don't play no game. Elaborate.
You sound like me talking to the kids. So I noticed that a lot of the women that I would date had like issues that they had before or something, some traumatic stuff that happened to them previously. And I would like try and save them from it or like be this like hero for them. And I realized that even when you're watching superhero movies and stuff, they're trying to save the city, but in their gist of trying to save the city, they destroy it at the same time. Mm. So me trying to save this woman, I'm bringing up all this like great stuff for her, but I'm destroying her at the same time. I'm not doing anything good for her. So I realized the parallel between the two. And then at the gist of all superheroes, they're all just trying to compensate for some stuff that happened to them before. Batman is trying to avenge his parents. Superman is trying to avenge his lost city. Spider-Man is trying to avenge his uncle. So it seems like they're being selfless, but they're actually being selfish. They're really just using that person for their own personal gratification to build themselves up. Same thing with like any superhero movie that you see, like the Avengers, they're mm-hmm. destroying New York City, but they're trying to save it from the aliens. They're doing more damage than the aliens
need
did.
Those Accords, yes, sir. Yeah,
see, I just watched Civil mm-hmm. War, Captain America.
Look at that.
And I was like, oh, okay.
Was it dope? You liked it?
That shit was dope. So they put me on these Marvel movies, like, 2 weeks ago, so I've been trying to like slowly watch them.
Make sure you watch Winter Soldier. I think that's one of the best.
That's exactly what he said 2 weeks ago. I promise. Yeah. That's exactly.
We running the Infinity War.
Yo, that's what he said 2 weeks ago.
Jarrell in the charge now. We're going to Infinity War.
Infinity War.
I'm saw the commercial yesterday again.
I'm trying to buy my tickets tomorrow.
Butterflies.
It's gonna be lit.
They're on sale.
But I see Black Panther on in slow motion.
They're on like, sale already.
I don't know, but I will. As soon as like they come available, I'm gonna buy them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they so they do more damage to the city than actually the aliens do. And as soon as the city's done, as soon as they're saved, they don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. So as soon as the woman is saved, I was kind of over the relationship. I was like, well, I did my job. Now I have no interest. But to be honest, I'm the one that needs the saving because I'm over here trying to save all these damsels. I'm the one that needs to be saved. Mm-hmm. So that was my concept for it. I came up with that poem like 3 years ago. And then somebody gave me the idea, yo, you should have someone, have the woman write a rebuttal to it. And the twist at the end, the woman being the villain, was like, oh. She's like, oh, she was actually using me.
Yeah.
The whole thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was dope, man. It took me forever to come up with that, but it was really cool.
That's dope, man. You know, like, when I first, so I watched it numerous times, because, like, the first time I watched it, when you were... So from the hero perspective, right, as it's going along, I'm like, yo, where is this going? This is going to take a weird twist, a weird turn. Because mm-hmm. you're, like, saying all these great things about how you don't want to look like anyone else and how, but then I can't give you all of me. Mm-hmm. And then when you said that, I was like, yeah, this shit about to take a weird twist. And I was waiting for the twist. But I was really impressed with the lowest part also because like, I felt like that was necessary to, like, truly understand the complex between the two characters, basically. It was, like, the hero and, like, how you had this inner conflict also. And then also Lois is like, yeah, but I'm a villain also, and I used you as well. And I was like, yo, this is so dope.
Like, yeah, it was like, I'm glad you actually mentioned that point because that's, like, one of my favorite lines is that, that means you can never get close to me because I have that forever have to protect my secret identity.
Exactly. That's
so, like, I can't allow you to see my vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. I can't allow you to see who I really am. So you're just going to always see that person that's in front of me. So we're both showing off personas. I'm showing you hero, you're showing me the damsel. Mm-hmm. But we're both using each other for personal gain, for selfish reasons. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was, when she came up and wrote the poem, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
This is dope. Like, yeah. Better than mine. I might not put you in better
than mine. But like, replace
friend,
you.
No, my friend, I got a shout out, Tanika Rose. She's mm-hmm. like one of the best songwriters I know. And my friend Mika, she's a singer. She was the one that was acting out the Lois in the video.
So. Yeah,
that was dope. More to come though.
Yeah, nah, that was dope.
More to come.
So how long have you been? So I didn't even know you were like you wrote poetry. Was this like something that's been in the arsenal in the chamber for years, or like, how'd this come about?
So, well, first of all, both my parents were aspiring rappers. Oh. So. Like, that's where I got, I guess, the bug from. Mm-hmm. So, like, my mom is actually way better than my father, which is, my mom had bars. Like, it was lit. So then, I've always wanted to do it, but I was always afraid.
Yeah.
I was afraid because the way I present the poetry is not in the same cadences as, I'm sorry, the way I present the poetry is not the same way as other spoken word artists do it. They have these similar cadences and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I would never do it like that. I just don't have that in me. But I saw this guy, a poet by the name of Daniel Betty. He has this famous poem called Knock Knock. Mm-hmm. But the way he presented it was so powerful and touched like such deep emotions. I was like, oh, I can do it. Mm-hmm. I can do it just like how he did it. And I was saying earlier that around the times when I did start doing poetry, I was in like counseling for like 3 years. I was doing like my own personal counseling.
What year was this? If you know what I mean, like around what time?
It was like towards the last year of St. John's, so it was like
2013. Oh, I'm tripping. That's when we went to St. John's.
Oh, you tripping?
I'm bugging. My bad.
Long no, it's been a long. Yeah. So it was like the, yeah, like the last year of St. John's to about the first last year of grad school.
Got you.
So yeah, I was doing counseling, and as I was doing counseling, I was just unwrapping certain things that I never really thought about. And my way of expressing it was through poetry. Mm-hmm. So, like, most of my poems, I never write down. It's literally, like, a puzzle piece in my head. And I would have, like, one line and then just build on top of that, on top of that, on top of that. And then I have, like, a complete story. So, it was, I would always start my poems as, like, I use this poetry as therapy to set my inner thoughts free so I could eventually become the man that I want to be. Mm-hmm. So, that's what it all was. It's all my poems are reflections of me.
So, well, you never write?
Most of the, I mean, I'm not Jay-Z, but
you know that's what I was thinking. I'm like, okay.
I'll put them so quickly. I mean, I'm not Jay-Z, but
motherfucker's about to beat on the table. It's supposed to be something there. Nah, it literally depends on what I'm talking about or what it is. So, like, if there's a topic, the first thing that comes to my head, I'll think it and then to just build on top of that. And it's like a puzzle piece. Just like once they come together in my head, it's in my head. They're stuck in my head. The hero poem I came up with, like I just walked some girl to her house and I was walking home. It was like literally a 20-minute walk. And the opening line and just like, Katayma, hi, my name is Katayma. I have a hero complex. And then I was like, which means no problem is ever too complex and just building on top of that, on top of that. And that's how it usually works for me. None of my inspiration from poetry actually comes from poetry. I watch battle raps. The way they play with the words, the way they spit, stuff like that. That's how all my inspiration comes. So that's it. I just fix it and build it in my head. And once it comes out, it comes out. And I think that's why my poems actually hit the core most of the time, because it's literally just from the depths of my soul coming out. So that's what it is.
Got you.
Because that's what I was telling before Jarrell got here. Like, that's something I think we all felt at one point. We just never fully, like, brought it out. Like, I know I did, and I didn't realize it until sort of the poem. Like, damn, like, you really be looking at weaknesses and you try to fix women when you're in a relationship, not realizing you might cause more damage than you think.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think Chris Rock said it recently where he said that, women are loved unconditionally, but men are loved with a condition. So, like, or love under a condition. So, like, under a condition that you could provide something. So, as a man, you're taught from jump, you're supposed to save. You're supposed to help. You're supposed to assist. And you look at this woman more of a, as a mission rather than a woman that you're supposed to love, that you're supposed to protect, and all this other stuff. You look at her as, like, a mission to accomplish, which is not fair to her. Because if you only see the mission, then...
Yeah, once it's done.
Once it's done, well, what else am I supposed to do? Because, you know, men are usually tunnel vision. We go to we go to the clothing store, we get pants. We go to the pants
section.
In
and out, yep.
And we go home.
In and out. I came in for this. Why are we looking at everything else?
Why are we looking at the
clothing section? Yeah, I know my size already. Yeah. Yo.
That's real. It's real quick though. But
ain't been that tough a week.
I ordered some jeans yesterday, right? My girl was like, "Yo, how'd you order those so quickly?" I was like, "Cause they fit just like the other jeans that I bought."
Yeah, I ain't gained 50 pounds.
I know they should
already. Size.
But it's funny because I'm listening to the poem and it made me realize, like, damn, like, I don't know if I feel that way now, but like, I know that I've gone through phases in my life where I did have this complex where it was like I'm literally looking. I was attracted to people that I could help. Or a knife sack I had tracked to, but like it was more so like I would see a woman that I could help, and then I felt obligated to help them and assist them, and it was like, why do I feel obligated to help you? But then once I helped you, and I felt like I got you to, you know, the mission is complete now. Then I'm looking at you, and I'm like, why am I here?
Yeah, because it's like it's like everyone wants to feel needed, and because you know people will say, oh, a man wants to feel like a man, a woman wants to feel like a man. But if you go to the gist of what that actually means is, people want to feel needed. You want to feel like you have a purpose in this relationship. And oftentimes it's told our purpose is to save you from your past, or like I said in a poem, is to prove to you that I will never be like the other scumbags. Mm-hmm. And then I wind up being just like that scumbag. I was only with you to help you, mm-hmm. to help you for that mission. Now, well, this is awkward. Like, kind of ready to go. Like, so, and I noticed it was like a, it was kind of like a repeated over and over thing that like I noticed that happened. And the good thing for me is that once I write the poems, and I'm like, it's like facing it. Mm-hmm. And now that I face it, I'm like, okay, I'm kind of over that now.
Question. So, I guess it's kind of a personal question, but how do you get over that then? Like, if you, so you say you face the poem, you realize that about yourself. Like, what steps do you take to get past that?
Well, okay, so like I was saying before, when I was doing poetry and mm-hmm. when I started doing those poems, I was in counseling. When you're in counseling, counseling allows you to look at past things mm-hmm. and from a different perspective. So at the core of it, you're trying to make up for the past people you couldn't save, the past people you couldn't protect. When you start examining that and start understanding, like, well, so I guess to answer your question, the gist is first, understand where that's coming from. Understand, why do you feel that way? Why do you feel so obligated to be with this person just to save them? Once you figure that out, understand that, one, it's the past. And two, a lot of those things, those burdens that you're putting on your back, is not your cross to bear. It's just not. It's not your fault. It wasn't, not much you could do. There's not much you could do to save that person. You saving this new person ain't going to rearrange or change the past. Mm. The only thing you could do from that is learn from it. And if you want to help someone, you could help people, which is perfectly fine, but that shouldn't be the sole purpose why you're with this person. Mm. So the gist is to find out why you're doing this and understand that's not your fault. It wasn't your fault. There's nothing you could do about it. So get to the core of why you want to do it.
Mm. Yeah. Because it sounds like it's something internal. It's not something that just popped up. It's definitely something
internal. Yeah, it's definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of the people you pick is because internal reasons. Like, there's, you know, they remind me of your mom, or, you know, there's something that you grew up with. Or, like, I'm used to, I'm not really attracted to girly women. Because the women in my family are not girly at all. I forget that they're women most of the times. They will fight you. I'm legit serious. My cousin got in a fight. On Christmas, over dog shit.
Over dog shit.
Over someone, you leaving dog shit around the house. All I saw was bop, bop, bop. Oh, no. That's my family. So So when I see like a girly woman, that's not what I'm attracted to. But it's internal. That's what you've been learned to associate women or something like that. Mm-hmm. The people that you grow up, the women or the men that you grow up with, that's your barometer of mm-hmm. your expectations for the opposite sex.
Were you a psych major?
I was.
Okay.
Yeah. I got my bachelor's in psychology, got my master's in industrial organizational psychology.
Okay. I figured. I was like, you know, your barometer. I was like,
I just can't be deep, brother.
I was like, all right, this is a whole other level of psychology.
I mean, psychology is everywhere.
Yeah, it is, but you know, you just seem more well-versed in it than the average person.
Yeah, I love it. That's the reason why I don't know why I'm a teacher now, but like, but I love it. It's
so you can psychoanalyze these badass children.
I don't. I only count down to 4:15. At this point, I'm like 4:15, June 22nd. That's all I'm waiting for.
What grade?
Fifth.
Oh shit! About to go to middle
school. Soon come.
No, they're considered middle school at this point, but it's right before psychology major, so it's right before puberty. So like biologically, they're still kids, but they're making that transition into like being teenagers and stuff. And that's just when the asshole comes out. Like this little girl called me out in front of everyone. Mr. Stewart's elbows is ashy.
Oh, damn!
Bitch, you got a 32 on your exam.
Be humble.
Spell ashy. Spell ashy.
Be humble.
It's a hard age. It's a very, very hard age. I mean, I talk shit about, you know, the kids and like their assholes, but they are. But I feel like I can say that because like I'm from where they're from. Like mm-hmm. I grew up in Brooklyn, in Canarsie, right around there. My parents are Caribbean, just like their parents are Caribbean. I know what they're going through a lot of the times. I can relate to them. Mm-hmm. And being a teacher comes, you have to have this level of empathy dealing with these kids, because there's often times where you got to understand, no, she really couldn't do her homework because she's the only person in her house taking care of seven other kids. Mm-hmm. No, he really, if you give a kid, there was one kid that had, he had, his parents pretty much abandoned him. And he had a grandma that was dying of AIDS. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty much him taking care of himself. And the other teachers would get so annoyed when he wouldn't show up to school and he wouldn't do his homework. I'm like, you have a 10-year-old kid who's by himself. You give a 10-year-old the option to do your homework and go to school or sit at home and play video games. Which one do you think he's going to pick?
Yeah.
There's a certain level of empathy that I feel like a lot of other educators lack that you really need to be in. Mm-hmm. But teaching is just, it takes everything out of you.
Yeah, but see, you also, they lack the empathy because they probably never faced those circumstances.
No.
You know, they don't have no way to, not recognize, but they don't feel for that, you know, for those circumstances because they never experienced it.
Basically. Yeah, it's like us trying to, like, you know, come up with women's rights issues or something. Like, or trying to, like,
yeah, it's really, you know, difficult. You have no experience with
we
it.
We don't. Yeah. It's like, there's not, you can have as much empathy and, you know, as you would want to. I mean, you could have as much kind of understanding as you would want, but at the end of the day, you're not a woman. So there's certain things that you don't know, that fear of walking around 3 o'clock in the morning because you think some man might assault you. You don't know that fear of, like, oh, if I wear this outfit, will it send the wrong message? Even though that doesn't matter at all. Like, we don't know that fear. Just like they don't know that fear of being a black kid in Brooklyn, having to look both ways. Like, there were certain things that I had to go through growing up in school that I realized that no one had to go through that. Mm. There's a lot of people that went to school and didn't have to worry about getting robbed. There's a lot of people that didn't
yeah.
went to school, didn't worry about getting jumped. Like, there's people that just la 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 la, I'm in yeah. school, and that was it. I didn't know that existed. Just like these kids, sometimes they don't know. There's a kid that got hit with a stray bullet 3 blocks away from my school. 3 blocks away. And that's a reality that these kids gotta live with. That some of these teachers who come in, some of these teachers are coming in from North Dakota.
Wait, what neighborhood are you teaching?
I'm in Canarsie.
Oh, okay.
Which you would think is calm, but Canarsie is way more hidden. But, like, in the charter school network, it's like most of the teachers are not from New York. They're yeah. from Oregon. They're from North Dakota. They're from South Dakota. Ain't no black people over there.
None.
Ain't no people from the city over there. So there's a lack of empathy that you'll have. And that's one of the reasons why I, like, get up every day to go, because I know the kids want me there.
Yeah.
But June 22nd.
Yeah, got to find a new hope.
You better look into Batman or something like that. I'll leave you some comic books.
How do you balance that, though? Like, balance, you know, you said, like, teaching takes all of your energy. And I know, like, I watch my mom, that shit drains her.
Mm-hmm.
While also maintaining a personal life and also, like, maintaining your passion to write your poetry and things of that nature.
Because that passion is just never going to go away. Mm. That's my poetry is the gateway to my dreams, to what I want to do, to being involved in entertainment, to creating movies, series, acting and stuff. That is my gateway to get there, and I have to stay focused on that. Mm. I've always felt like I have this potential to be something great, and I know that I won't be fully happy with my life until I reach that potential. Mm-hmm. That's what keeps me going. I say I teach, but I hardly say I'm a teacher. I'm Katama first. So I always put my first self first. I always put, like, okay, I know I got to work and I'm going to get my stuff done, but I got to go see my friends, or I got to go, you know, write these poems, or I got to finish working on the script that I'm doing, because this is what I really want to do and this is where my heart is. Mm. And also, I can be selfish. Well, not selfish, but self-centered at this time, because I ain't got no kids. Nice. I ain't married. So the only person that it all falls on is me. So I know that what I'm doing is great and helping these kids, but it's not my end goal. And I just stay focused on the end goal.
Yeah.
And I grew up, you know, being hardworking and, like, having to push through anyway. Like, I was at St. John's, I was working 3 jobs and going to school. You tired, but if there's something that you got to do, you got to get up and get to it. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
There's no excuses. That's just your passion. That's your passion.
Wait, you Jamaican?
I am.
Damn.
Not,
I apologize. That was just too easy.
Two for two, huh?
He tossed it up. Like,
he's a psych major?
He tossed it up. I was like, all right.
Vegas, this nigga.
I dunked that one. I work at three jobs. I said, oh, Caribbean must be Jamaican.
Can we bring it back to the poem for a second? Who came up with the idea for the visuals?
Okay, so my brother originally came up with the idea for the originals. So my brother, he actually came up. You know, do you remember that that Hurt Bae mm-hmm. video where she's, mm-hmm. he's pretty much confessing? Yep. To, you know, to,
saw the sequel savage. Too.
Savage. No. You just was fucking with the wrong one. I would never do that to my ex. My job was completely faithful the entire time. But I want to make that clear, but I would never. She would slit my throat in front of everyone. But whatever, that's a different story. So he came up with the concept of like me confessing mm. that to her. Like, because Hero is pretty much explaining why I broke up with you. Mm. So I, my brother told me that. And I was like, oh, that sounds like a dope idea. So then I was filming for another video for my Ebony poem, and the person that I got, Rachel, who I asked to be Ebony, she said, I was telling her the idea for the Hurt Bae / Hero poem, and she was like, you should have someone write a rebuttal to that. And I was like, oh, that sounds dope. Because, you know, she should say something back to me.
Yeah.
So then I had, that's when I hit up Tanika, and Tanika wrote up the poem. So then I had the original back and forth of me, her talking. And then when I cut it the first time, when I edited the first time, I was like, okay, this is just me and her talking back and forth. I need more. So then we reshot another scene in which it's like us, it's our last day together, mm-hmm. the picnic. I wanted to tell that story of how it ended to explain why we're here right now. Mm-hmm. We're both here to explain why it did end. And I want you to see that story. I wanted you to see that story as to why we ended it and why are we sitting here now. And also I wanted you to get invested in the story. Just to tell the story a little bit more. And, you know, people have short attention spans, so you need stuff to go back and forth. That's mm-hmm. very true. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, is that it, basically when you, that the part where you threw the towel on the floor, I was like, damn. Yo, like, damn. She just like, was that the end of the relationship? And then you guys sort of meet to talk about why it didn't work?
Yeah. So, it was when I walked out the room and like threw that blanket on the floor, my brother was like, yo, throw that shit on the floor. Like he said it. So I was like, ah, and I threw it. And that was just, in a way, the blanket was like, you know, what we were using for the picnic. We were doing that. And like me just throwing it was like, I'm done. But also, it's the cape.
Oh, shit.
It's the cape. Like just me throwing the cape down. Like, you know what? I'm over it.
Damn.
So that was it.
I got to watch that again. It's like a Marvel movie. Well, you got to watch it a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Well done.
What's your favorite piece of work that you've done? Or do you have one?
That's a good question. My favorite one to perform is Hero, because everyone usually likes it, and it's so different than what people are used to hearing. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, most of the time when you go to a slam poetry session, it's extremely pro-black, things like that, or it's about you know, being heartbroken back in the day. Mm-hmm. But this dynamic that I'm speaking from, I feel like it's not, it's very unique. So I love doing that because I like to see like the reaction when it hits people like layer by layer. My favorite poem that I wrote or came up with was Dreams, because it speaks to me now. And it's literally talking about having dreams, being, it starts off with, I'm so consumed by my dreams and aspirations that reality is my nightmare. Because I think about my dreams every day, all day. Mm-hmm. And I came up with that poem when I was working at Morgan Stanley. I was like a business analyst there.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, I hated it. So hated it. So like, but me sitting in front of that computer thinking about my dreams all day, but in our society that we live in, your dreams are beaten down and replaced with like stability. Don't be an actor. Don't be this and that. Go be a doctor. Or go be a bus driver. Mm. Or go be this and that. And like, that speaks to me on a different on so many different levels, because it's hard to go back and write that poem, to write that script.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I just want to go home and watch Modern Family. That's all I want to do. I want to decompress from this long day. But if there's a passion in you, I think Denzel said it. He said, if there's a dream that keeps coming to you, then that means it's already yours. You just got to go get it. Mm. That's proof that that dream is already yours. You got to go get it. So like the fact that I'm constantly thinking of that dream and but being terrified of pursuing it, because growing up, I was the role model. I was the one who got, like, you know, good grades and, you know, went to good schools and got my master's degree. And, you know, being an artist has, like, this stigma to it. This, like, oh, he's not going to do nothing, or he's not going to make any money, or he's not going to go any far.
Yeah.
Being afraid of that stigma has constantly kept me from my dreams. But now, 2018 is, like, my speak your truth, living your purpose, 2018. It's, like, I'm trying to do what I felt I was put on this earth to do, and that's create dope shit. And that's what I want to do. And I want to be able to speak to people on that level, so that dreams is speaking to everyone who is at that 9 to 5 that they don't want to be at, who's living for Friday, who's living for the weekend, because that doesn't make sense to me. Every time one of my coworkers say happy Friday, I'm like, there's 7 days out of the week. Why am I living for 3, 2? Because because Sunday, you just think about Monday. So that's why I
one and a half, because Friday you at work.
Oh, yeah,
that's it. Like, you living for just one day, and that doesn't make sense to me. I don't think we were put on this earth to do that. And especially, like I said before, I love saying it, I'm young, I ain't got no kids. Mm-hmm. So it's just me. So it doesn't make any sense for me to live that life if the only obligation that I have to anyone is to myself. So dreams is my favorite one, because it just speaks to me on, like, multiple levels.
Did you have, like, a sudden realization? What changed?
What do you, sudden realization?
Like, that really made you, what triggered you to really go for it?
I think one of the biggest things for me was I got this amazing opportunity to work for Harry Belafonte. For some people who don't know who Harry Belafonte is, he's like this civil rights activist. You know, he like pretty much funded the civil rights movement. He used to fly people down to march on Washington and stuff like that. And I had this opportunity to work with him, and being in his house, seeing all his golden plaques, seeing all his humanitarian awards, because at the end of the day, I want to be able to use my art to help people. That's all I want to do. So seeing him, being in his house, made it real. It made it very, very, very real that, like, yo, this shit could happen.
Yeah.
Like, one time I was in the office with him, and he's answering the phone, and he's like, yo, what's up, Sid? And I look at somebody else and said, Sid, what the fuck is Sid? He said, Sidney Poitier. I said, get the fuck out of here. Wow. I said, this nigga's on the phone with Sidney Poitier. Yo, wow. Hey, yo, Sid. Like,
what up, Sid?
Yo, that's what he said. What's up, Sid? Or like, he missed a phone call from, like, somebody. Well, I'm trying to think. Can I say that? Well, no, he missed a phone call from like Mr. Williams. And I was thinking Jesse Williams. It was actually Pharrell. And I was, and like, he didn't even care. Like, he was just like, oh, it's Pharrell. I was like, this was like happy Pharrell. Like, when happy was like number one on the Billboard. And I'm like, he don't care. Like, he genuinely does not. Back. Yeah, he's like, yeah, I call him if I feel like it. Like, he was, but seeing him was like, or him being in his presence and talking to him, like, it wasn't like an internship where I went and got him donuts. Like, me and him talked, kick philosophy. We talked about, like, his views on God and views on black people. I asked him stuff like, you know, you watch Martin Luther King die. You watch Malcolm X die. You watch all these other people die. You wasn't afraid to die? And he was like, no. He said, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die for something, you know, purposeful. I'm not afraid. And so it was that. And then the other time where he like talked to somebody, I watched him talk to somebody in Ferguson. There was like a whole panel of people talking. This was like right after the Mike Brown situation. And they were like, you know, excited to see him, blah, blah, blah. Harry Belafonte was like, you know, you guys are great. You remind me so much of the people back in the 60s. And somebody stopped him like right while he was talking. And he said, all due respect, that doesn't make me feel any better. He said, because that was 50 years ago, and we still fighting over the same shit. We still fighting for the same shit, same equality, same no more police brutality, same ending of racism. We still doing the same stuff. And that to me resonated, because I'm like, I don't want to fight for the shit 50 years from now. And I feel that art is my way of expressing things. If I have art and make money, then I can use that opportunity to help other people. So that experience of like meeting Harry Belafonte, working with him, seeing that, that really like, okay, you got to get this together. But then also just talking, like, and I read The Alchemist too. The Alchemist is like dope. The Alchemist like pretty much tells you whatever the universe, whatever you want, the universe will set you up so that you can get there.
I'm on my fourth read right now.
See, I only read it once. I'm not. It was a struggle the first time. I'm not a reader. That's the only thing. I was like, this is hard. It's hard. I'm not in college anymore. Like,
you have to force yourself to read
once
it.
Once I got that master's, I was like, I never have to read again.
That's facts.
No, but like it was cool to hear my thoughts in a book.
In a book.
Because yeah. I'm like, I think all this shit. I think all of this stuff. I watch Will Smith talk all the time. I watch inspirational people talk. I watch a whole bunch of people talk. I get inspiration from anyone.
Yeah.
A lot of it comes from The Alchemist. So like reading about like whatever you want is out there. You just gotta go get it.
Yeah.
Is what motivated me to do it. And like me taking that step from, I knew I was about it when I left Morgan Stanley. Like, cause I was at Morgan Stanley, was making bread, you know, I was making pretty good money, young. You know, I'm used to being broke. I'm making money, and I hated it. Like, I hated that job because there was no purpose in it. That's genuinely what it was. There was no purpose. I was sitting in front of a computer, typing spreadsheets, stuff like that. I was pretty much the diversity hire, and I was using my skills to just keep a rich company rich. That's it. I read about urban schools and suburban schools and the disparity between them, and I realized I need purpose. If I'm not doing something with purpose, I don't even want to do it. So I took a huge pay cut and went as an associate teacher. And once I did that, I was like, I took a huge pay cut and did that. I guess I'm about that life. I was broke. I was not broke anymore. Mm-hmm. Then went back to being broke. I chose to be broke. That was a choice. Stupid.
You're happy.
You're happy. Because you're rich in your heart. You're just not rich in the pocket.
Yeah, I can't tell but the bill collectors that shit.
Like Sally may knock on your door. Like, you I know you broke
this is a heart.
Yeah. So you never did like poetry in college or nothing? Like or did
I
you
didn't. I did not. I would watch people do it and I would like I would love to do that, but I never thought that it would be good. Or I never thought that it would be people would receive it well. Something. Oh, I didn't think that was also the time where I didn't start doing counseling until like my senior year of college.
Yeah.
So counseling did help me unlock a lot of thoughts, and I was able to bring those thoughts into fruition through counseling. So pre-counseling, I had thoughts, but I didn't know how to word them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then that was another thing is like, and it was another thing I'm working on too, and it's not worrying about as much what other people think. If you come from a genuine...
That's so difficult.
No, if you come from like a genuine, authentic place, it's going to resonate with somebody. It's going to hit somebody. And wrestling taught me that. Like whenever a wrestler comes out with like a cheesy, corny gimmick like Rocky Maivia, nobody feels it.
No, they ask you to die, yeah.
Yeah, they ask you to die. But when you're like, no, fuck it, I'm just going to be me and just be my authentic self, it hits people. Mm-hmm. And that's something I learned about. I've watched countless spoken word artists perform before me, and I'm like, shit, I gotta go after him. And then I perform, and that same person that I was worried about going after comes up to me, and like, that shit hit me. So making your own lane for yourself too is just like, you know, I didn't know how to make a lane for myself back then. I was worried about trying to fit into some box, but now my comfort level with myself is like up there. So now I make my own lane.
That's
for myself.
Nice, bro.
Yeah,
that's dope.
You have a question? June 22nd.
June 22nd.
You mentioned it, right?
It's the last day of school.
What happens after that?
I was going to say sell drugs, but.
Sell poems, please don't.
No, I would never. June 22nd is the last day of school. Pretty sure my boss is not going to. Hopefully, she's not going to see it. It's the last day of school, but it's also.
First day of freedom.
First day of like, yo, I'm really trying to dive fully into entertainment in any way, shape, or I can. So my goal right now is to get a summer internship in Los Angeles. So, because I had the privilege of going to LA a couple of weeks ago. My first time out there. At first, I wasn't feeling it. Like, I was just like, this is pretty superficial. I'm not into that stuff. And then I went hiking with my friend Atika, who moved out there. And I thought it was just going to be me and her. Apparently not. She brought a whole just crew of black creatives. And like,
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I knew it was them because they walked. We went hiking, and I knew it was them, and Migos was playing. And I was just like, my favorite kind. And so then they started walking up, and talking to them was dope because most of them were not from LA. They were from New Orleans, they was from Atlanta, they was from DC, they was from Philly, but they all came to LA and they all bonded off of that experience of trying to make it and trying to live out their dreams. And I thought that was dope. And I also grew up in Brooklyn my entire life. Yeah. I've been here for 27 years. And the fact that when I go to that school and see the zip code is still 11236, which is the same zip code I grew up in, it kills me. Because I'm like, there's more to life out there. There's way more to life. There's way more than New York. It's the greatest city on earth, but there's other cities. So I want to be in LA. That's my goal. That's what I want to do. I want to be in LA. I want to be where the action is happening. I want to have, everybody's going out there, but everybody ain't me.
That's right. That's
everybody
right.
Ain't
you
me.
Gotta have.
So that's my goal. So my goal is to find an internship while I'm out there, save up some money, because apparently everyone's struggling in LA too.
You gotta have some bread out there.
Gas prices is preposterous.
Oh, so you're gonna move there like full time?
My goal. That's my goal right now.
Wait, this summer coming up?
My goal is to dip my toe in LA for the summer. Ooh, yeah, because
lukewarm, okay.
Oh, homeless.
This is my spot right here.
Because as a teacher, I still get paid for the summer. So that's a good time to like explore. Don't roll your
No.
Because everyone, happy for you. Because everyone says the must be nice. You earned that shit. Mm-hmm. You crawl and bleed to June 22nd. But that's the goal. The goal is to be out there because I get paid for the summer. So, you know, I got a little cushion room. And if I could set myself up to, like, get a job out there, then I'm trying to be out there. That's it. The only people I was concerned about was my boys. Because I grew up, I've known my friends since I was 13. And like my friends from St. John's, you know, Chanel, Christina, all of them, you know, I was worried about leaving them. But
That's how I gotta be sometimes.
You got, I mean,
did they support you?
Yeah,
that's how you know you're real friends.
Yeah, of course. Right. I mean, my boys was like, you know, at least we got somebody in LA.
That's true too. And, you don't got an Airbnb.
That be your boys for real. I'm like, same thing I said. Same thing I would have said.
That's real.
Because they're gonna be on my couch one day, and I'm just like, y'all needs to go. And then my friends Christina and them. At first, they was like, you ain't going nowhere. Stay your black ass here. But then after, but like once they saw how serious I was and like my video and stuff, they were like, all right, go ahead, yeah, go. But you know, we'll always support you. And that's the scariest thing for me because I have trust issues and it's hard for me to trust people I didn't grow in the trenches with. That's my thing. If I didn't, because I grew up, you know, I was broke. I didn't have no money. I grew up tough. So my friends have been my friends for over 10 years. They've seen me at my worst, just like my friends from St. John's and even my friends from Brooklyn College have seen me at my worst, where I didn't have any money, where I didn't have enough money to go into the ATM because I didn't have $20 in my account. So I would have to go to the teller and be like, so can I get this $7?
$20 was like $100, dog.
You got to write that $732 out. It's like $732. No, you must have missed that dot.
In there, dog.
So... And they would sit there and be like, did you eat today, Katama? I'd be like, yeah, I was lying. And they knew I was lying. And they would give me that storm card and be like, go get something to eat. So it's hard for me to trust someone outside of that because they had my back. And that's the biggest thing I'm worried about in L.A. because they're talking about, they say, you know, people are phony. They'll stab you in the back.
No. Blah, blah, blah. L.A.? No.
Kev said that. Like, yo, what happened?
It's a doggy dog world.
All right, no, because people out there front a little bit too.
They definitely.
They'll say some stuff like, you know, I'm a service manager. You a
janitor. Everyone do.
You a janitor.
You a janitor.
Everyone's a service manager. That's like the thing. So I went out there. That's like the one thing I noticed. Like everyone is like, at least the appearance they give off is that everyone's on at their best. Everyone's at their peak, just based on their appearance and how they talk to and how they act. But I know it's all a game. Like, everyone can't be living this life.
Y'all struggling.
There's no way out. Everyone is just, like, making all this money. Everyone's chilling. Everyone's happy. I heard so many titles. It was insane.
Be humble.
I was like, oh, you vice president, too? Like,
vice president of the storage closet.
Bear with them. Some of them just high.
I felt bad. I mean, he was, like, 23, 24. Yeah, VP. Really? Have me going back. Let me hit the blunt real quick. What the fuck am I doing wrong?
Jarrell say some wild shit too.
Give me that shit you smoking, because apparently
I'm out here just being real. Like, yeah, this is what I do. You know, that and everyone's just like, oh. Exactly. I was getting like, oh, okay, that's it.
Yeah, broke ass.
How'd you get out here, spirit?
How'd you get out here?
Yo, I didn't even know that spirit was like a cheap line until like I flew to Atlanta and was like, this is terrifying.
Oh, it's terrible.
I'm the cheapest man you'll ever find. Yeah. I will never risk my life like that again.
No. I think Kevin gave me that. Him and our boy Armand. Ever since
back.
Then, never,
back,
never again.
God almighty.
Never again. Never. Never.
You don't get no Wi-Fi, no camera.
Like, I gotta pay for carry-on baggage. Oh. I'm like, nah.
And the seat. You gotta pay for the seat too?
You gotta pay for specific seats, but you really gotta pay for like a carry-on.
Oh yeah.
Like, you gotta pay for the carry-on.
$35 for the carry-on.
$35.
You get mean. Or you get your personal backpack. And the whole trip, your knees is like this.
When I say I would have figured out how to just fit stuff in my pocket or something like that before I paid $35.
What?
Never again.
Yeah, I flew that shit one time from Atlanta to Miami. Was it Miami? No, it was Miami. Orlando. Backpack only.
I'm not.
Backpack only. All weekend. I figured that shit out.
I flew Southwest to California.
Southwest is nice.
It was all right. It was one of those first come, first serve things.
JetBlue is nicer, though.
JetBlue is fantastic.
Yeah. JetBlue, I think.
JetBlue, however.
JetBlue or Delta? What's better?
JetBlue. Based on the snacks they give you, because they give you multiple snacks. They pass the basket around. Like, let me get two of those. Okay. Delta give you some little peanuts, and they be looking at you like you're crazy when you ask for some more.
You got to give me some back, actually.
Take half and give it to the person
next to you.
Pour it out in your hand, but that's right, put them in the cup. JetBlue is cool. Which one is the one that you get like cable on it?
Delta.
It's like satellite. It's like
oh, that's JetBlue.
That's JetBlue. That's JetBlue. You get the movies, yeah. Like the new movies.
Direct, they got DirecTV partnership. I watched the basketball game on the way back.
Yeah, I think I watched Lego Batman or something like that, mm-hmm. Which was lit.
Great movie.
It's a fantastic movie.
Great movie.
It's a fantastic movie.
I would suggest that if you guys have time.
Lego Batman. It's on HBO, I think.
It is.
Lego Batman.
I remember seeing it scrolling past.
It was a beautiful surprise. I didn't think it was going to be that great. They make Batman seem like Donald Trump pretty much, though.
You think so?
No, seriously. Watch it again. Like, he's like this, like, aristocrat.
Arrogant,
rich dude who's, like, obsessed with his own shit. Like, I mean, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, now that you say all that.
It's pretty funny. I hate flying, though. I hate it with every part of my soul.
Yeah, that's a long flight.
I hate flying.
Six.
I ain't a restless. I'm not one of them I can't just fall asleep, like.
I have the attention span of a lightning bolt. What do you think I was doing? Like, it was, no. I'm genuinely terrified of flying. Like, yeah. I hate it. But I think that's also, like, you know, tie into the whole fear thing. I'm not going to let fear stop me. Mm. I want to go to LA. I'm just going to get over it. It's like, I want to live my dream. So I'm afraid, but I'm going to get over it. But I hate flying.
That shit's beautiful.
I love
flying. I just hate
flying. I don't love flying. I love LA.
LA is when you cool, get there, man. Yeah, that breeze hit you.
Yeah. Mm. No. Nice little breeze.
Actually,
when you went, it was like 50-something degrees.
It was 32 degrees.
Yeah, it was cold.
There was hail at one point. I said, this doesn't make sense. Yeah. LA? 74 degrees over.
The weather was bugging a little bit.
In LA?
It was 30-something degrees.
Things are better now.
I went in October.
Things are better now.
It was what? 79, nice, you know, so not too warm. Nice. 79 in a day, dropped to 63 at night with the breeze. I'm on the rooftop, just
I just remember why I can't stand drill head. Sometimes. I was just reminded why I can't stand him. He has a great way of bragging without bragging. Yeah. It was just 79, you know. Oh, you had 32, it was 79.
You still making that trip?
I didn't book. First of all, we're gonna talk about that, but shit went up about $100.
What trip?
I was supposed to book a flight to LA and then.
When?
In April.
Okay.
And I slept on it.
I'll just stay in a couple weekends. We can revisit
after this. And I slept on it and then the shit went up $100 and I said, no.
Yeah, use your Hopper app.
Wait, when were you going?
April 13th to the 16th.
Oh.
I went during All Star Weekend.
That shit wasn't expensive?
It was.
I was about to say, yeah. I was looking
some flights on that weekend. It was very expensive, but. I was like, I'm gonna go. Like I went with my coworker, and I went with him because I was able to be honest with him and be like, I don't want to talk to you while we're out there. You're going with me because it's cheaper. And he was like, shit, I don't want to talk to you. I said, well, damn, <That's> glorious. But he was the main driver behind it. Like he was like, because I'm hella cheap, and I'm so used to like money being such a fixture that. When I saw the tickets for LA, I'm like, I'm not going. That's too much. But he was like, this is something you've always wanted to do. This is something we both always wanted to go to LA. Mm. And he's like, the time is now. Just do it. Just pay for it. And I couldn't pay for the weekend after because I would have to call out of work. I wasn't going to miss that day. I wasn't going to miss that money. But he was the driving force behind it. It was a little expensive, but I'm glad I went when I went.
That's the last words he said to you, right?
Pretty much. Okay. We didn't even sit together on the plane. Because, you know, it's first come, first serve. So he was, you know, what's up, y'all? Hey, how you doing, Play? He lived his life, I live mine. We met up for breakfast from time to time.
Oh, that's nice.
In the morning, you know, had Roscoe's a couple of times.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
He told me about his day. I told him about mine. And then he went on his merry way. I went on mine. It was perfect. It was beautiful. Mm. It was great. We split the Airbnb in half and stuff and everything.
Mm.
It was dope.
How was the Airbnb prices?
Expensive. I don't remember.
Okay.
Because it was around my birthday. It was getting close to my birthday, so I had like a trick my mom into paying for it. It's like, you don't got to buy me nothing.
You got to do what you got to do.
You got to do what you got to do. We all got to make sacrifices.
Because I rented a car, too. So I was like,
you went all the way in.
I'm not going to be Ubering everywhere. So I just went and just got a car. And I was like,
all right. Just got to Uber to one location and stay there all day.
All day.
Guess I'm in Santa Monica today. Just stay there all day.
You just see it on the way.
Yeah, just there
you go. Fucking day. There you go. That Hollywood sound right there. In the far distance.
You got to get that zoom on. I'm going to zoom it real close on you. Yeah, I was in Hollywood.
Oh, my God.
I went all around L.A., though. I'm really happy I rented that car because I went everywhere. I was in Beverly Hills, North Hollywood, West Hollywood. It was just dope to see the city life, but then mountains. Damn. Like right there, it's crazy.
That's where all them houses are.
Yeah, that's where, you know, that's where Beyonce is, probably like that. Like, yeah. It's a different feel over there. It feels different.
You like driving in all that traffic?
I don't mind traffic. I only mind traffic when
it's like, being recorded. We'll send you the clip when you live out there.
I'm telling you.
I don't mind traffic unless I'm late. Like, if I'm late for something like that, then I'm going to be pissed. Or if the traffic is going to make me late, it's fine. I'm going to be annoyed. I'm going to be highly irritated. I
fucking hate traffic.
But if I'm in my car, most of the time I'm in my car, I'm in my own world.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, playing, like, you know, the new album or something like that, or just bumping to some music. So I'm just in my own zone. So I'm fine with that. Mm. Unless, you know, AC's not working or something.
Yeah. Well, it was going from Studio City to downtown. Literally was in an Uber for an hour and a half.
That don't make no damn sense.
Just sitting there.
It's preposterous.
Listening to his bullshit little techno music.
Yeah, I was coming last time when I went from went to Santa Monica. It said 40 minutes, and it actually went 40 minutes. Coming back around 6 p.m., though, I was in the Uber, yeah, for an hour and a half.
That's just insane.
But I didn't, when I was out there, I didn't experience as bad traffic, though. It was like regular New York traffic.
Nah, you went at the right time.
I guess I didn't get the real deal.
Nah.
Count your blessings.
You'll see. Count your blessings. That's
it's
real.
Really that bad.
It's real. The guy who hopped in the pool with us, he said he had been in that car for an hour already. So that means he took him 2.5 hours to get downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember just being in that bitch. I listened to the entire podcast. I just literally zoned people out because I was like so damn just bored. I was like, this is a long ride downtown. I really had started sweating and shit in the Uber. I'm like, you know, I tried to get a little fresh and go downtown. Shit didn't work out.
And sweat stains on?
Sweat. All under the armpit. Just like, fuck.
Had to walk at full attention the entire time.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
I didn't experience like black.
Did that all for $2 extra. Because the Uber pool was $2 cheaper than the regular Uber.
I'm glad I rented a car though, and I didn't experience that bad. It wasn't that bad when I was out there.
Yeah.
But I really like just being in my own. Like when I was working at Morgan Stanley, the location was in Westchester, so I would have to drive an hour and a half to 2 hours pretty much every day.
Sheesh,
it was annoying. It was ridiculous. But that drive back and forth was like a lot of just think time.
Yeah.
Like it was just a lot of like, you know, just time to myself. I don't get as much time to myself as I would want. So just especially when I was out there in LA listening to like, you know, Black Panther album or some shit like that. It was like pretty dope. It was dope. It was good. And which is crazy because Kendrick is like third on my list right now. But his album was like fantastic. Damn was cool too. I liked All American Badass, but Damn was dope. But just listening to the music and like just seeing the dopeness of like Black Panther and just being out there, being around those black creatives, is like, yo, this is where I fucking wanna be.
I gotta go to LA. When you out there, it just puts a smile on your face because it's so warm. Mm. And he just like,
it wasn't warm when I was there, but it was good.
Sorry.
Does he keep bringing that shit up?
I apologize. No, you have to go back when it's warm. Like you have to go back
when it's
cold in New York and warm there. That's when you really appreciate
it. I thought I did that.
Yeah, I know.
I thought I accomplished that goal.
Warming, I don't know, but you weren't wrong.
74 degrees over here.
Yeah, that was that.
It was
one
32
day.
In California.
Yeah. Normally it's the reverse though.
Mm-hmm.
And you get off the plane and you just see it's palm trees and everyone's smiling and shit.
Are you gonna buy my ticket? Like,
I'm not buying my ticket.
Now you're getting me upset.
That shit went up $100. I told my cousin, I'll see you sometime after this. See, we'll try in June, nigga.
I heard San Francisco's pretty dope, too. Like, I heard it's like a...
Oh, that's... You gotta talk to Kev. Kev love going there.
You like
San Francisco? It's okay. I'd rather go to LA. It's cool.
Not as warm, though.
I heard it was, like, beautiful.
It is beautiful, like, but it's not as warm.
Okay.
It, like, it's currently stays around, like, 50, 60 degrees.
LA is
they
dope.
Got beaches that I wouldn't even go to. Like, I don't know why it's there, but it is beautiful. But like weather is the primary, like,
okay, that's your main
and
concern.
Just LA, yeah.
LA is dope. I think I saw the dude from 24. Like I was just like I pulled up, he pulled up next to me, and I gave him like
the black one.
No, the main Jack, dude.
Keep yourself.
Yeah, I just saw him. I was like, what's up?
Yeah.
And he gave me a head nod. I was like, oh shit.
Keep yourself
famous. I just gave him a head nod.
That shit is dope. Like my cousin just texted me the other day. He was like, "Yo, I just saw Marlon Wayans in like the nail salon by his house." And I was like, that's dope.
You think Halloween's is funny?
Hell no. I just, you know, it's funny, when I was younger, I used to love watching the Wayans Brothers. And then, but then now I watch it, it comes on MTV.
That's the weak link.
And I watch it, and I'm like,
you think Marlon's the weak link?
No, after coming on after like Martin and the Jamie Foxx show, it's just
and I watch it, I'm like, damn, really ain't funny. Y'all trying really hard. Mm-hmm. I feel like they were just trying too hard. But then I watched his Netflix special, Wokish. I didn't watch all of it. I cut it off after like the first 20 minutes.
I felt that way about the, I think it was Chris Tucker's. I tried.
Shit. Chris Tucker, cut that off too.
Chris, he had it was like a special
a year ago or 2 years ago. With the white suit on or something like that.
That's the it. I'm trying to get these taxes.
I didn't even know he had that.
I didn't watch it.
Watch that Wokish though.
No, I don't know.
Just put the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, don't do it.
And just be like, damn, like Marlon really out here doing this.
Don't do it.
But you know, I knew he wasn't funny. Like his movies aren't even funny. Like the movies that he produces himself. Mm-hmm. Like fuck.
What he did this one movie on Netflix that like
Naked
got my attention.
I had to watch that shit
because I had to see how it ended.
Pretty decent movie though.
I had to see how it ended.
I didn't know, it was a pretty decent.
It was decent because you used to trash.
I am used to trash. This mediocre shit right here. This mediocre
kind of fire. BET special right now. This ain't bad.
Basically,
that shit was whack.
Shit was terrible.
It's not as terrible as the rest of his shit.
I've seen his ass way too many times.
Yeah, that was
for me to be comfortable with. Yeah. And you gotta see Chris Rock's
I saw the Tambourine.
I gotta watch Tambourine. That one.
That one was dope. Dave Chappelle's was dope too.
That goes without saying.
Both
download it
now. All of them was
all
like,
four.
His like delivery and comedy is like, you genuinely have no idea what he's gonna say next. And when it says it, it's like, oh shit, this guy's a fucking idiot. But he's one of the greatest I've ever seen.
Best doing it right now.
You see Monique special?
Stay cool.
What special she had?
None.
You didn't hear all that stuff she was saying about how Netflix blackballed her? I mean, not blackballed, but they like offered.
Well, they were talking about the, you know, she got offered $5. To be honest,
that's a lot of money.
To us, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money for her. She's great in the sense that, like, as a stand-up comedian, that's a decent price for her. If it was an actress in like a... not a thriller or like a drama, she definitely deserves her money. She has an Oscar for Precious, and she does great jobs in like those kind of roles. As a stand-up comedian, I don't know Monique.
I mean, okay, so I watched
Miss Parker. In the comedy field, she's still Nikki Parker. That's her most prominent role.
So okay, no, her most prominent role is probably Precious.
As a comedian,
Okay. So. I thought that $500,000 was a low ball. Like that was pretty. She should have got offered a little bit more because Monique is a legend. Let me finish.
On UPN,
but I think she's a legend. I think she's a legend to like the black community. So like, there's certain things that like are legendary to us, but have never made that crossover appeal. So like, Boys in the Hood is legendary, or Paid in Full is legendary to us, but it didn't make that crossover appeal.
You think the Parkers is legendary? like what's legendary that she's done? I'm asking for real though.
I mean, that was
she's a queen of comedy,
Mr. Ogilvy. Like, everyone knows who that is.
Stop, you're not helping right now.
No, I'm saying everyone knows who that is. Everyone, Miss Parker,
everyone in the like, black community definitely knows who it is. And everyone's watched the Parkers, everyone knows who Monique is. She's like a legend to the black community, but she has not. I don't think crossover means if white people know she is, white people don't know who Monique is. Past Precious, they don't know who she is. And being that she didn't make that crossover appeal, then no, they're not going to give her as much money. But $500,000, that's a little disrespectful. And
but she couldn't get better.
We also don't know what everyone else got paid though.
And it's a business.
She compared herself to what, the Dave Chappelle?
That's what you don't do.
That's what you fuck.
Katie Schumer, is that her name?
Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer,
who just Katie Schumer.
I don't.
Two white.
Wrong white name.
You combine two white girls.
Build a bitch. I don't listen to her. I don't like her comedy, but like supposedly people love it. She's selling out European shows and all this other stuff. So she got what, 13 million, I think it was, somewhere along those numbers.
Yeah.
Whereas Monique,
what's the last thing you done? You bringing up Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock?
But we don't know what, like, she should have compared herself to like Cat Williams. He just did a special. What did he get paid?
But did you see her interview with Charlamagne?
Yeah, Breakfast Club. So we're referencing.
She made some.
But I thought she made some pretty valid points.
It was some.
I think she made some pretty decent points. But $500,000 is a low ball to me.
I think she 2 million would have been fine.
I turned my nose up to all her points.
Yeah, because like,
yeah, what do you think was valid?
At the top of my head, I don't remember, but because I watched it while I was at the gym, but I was listening to it and they made like counter offers or something like that.
No, they said no counter offers.
I think the 500,000 was okay. We're gonna pay you 500,000,
but you can't do this.
Yeah, you can't do shows or nothing like that for the next 2 years. I'm like, you can't do shows. That's how people get paid. Like, that's a little too low. But
she also didn't make a counter offer though.
She didn't. I still think 500,000 is low. Like 500,000. How much did Tiffany Haddish get offered?
That's different. Not a good, because she's on fire.
But I think she got paid 700,000. That's
to do voice for an animated series.
Yeah. That's not for a special. Okay, because like when I first heard Monique speak, I was like, Monique, you haven't been relevant since Precious. Now, if you was Tiffany Haddish saying this, I'd be like, oh yeah, Tiffany Haddish definitely not 13 million, but she definitely deserves a couple of million.
You don't get at least five.
She deserves at least a solid five. But like Monique, sis, it's been a while.
Yeah, and you got a bad reputation.
But the thing about it is that also, I can't name a stand-up special that Monique did. Like,
the Queens of Comedy. Oh, not even recent history.
Okay.
She did the Queens of Comedy.
I didn't think that was that funny.
Me either.
It was 2001. Because I think the Kings
of Comedy. Legendary. No, but
I didn't think Queens of Comedy was that funny.
Because the Kings of Comedy came out in 2000.
That shit was legendary.
That shit was hilarious.
That is hilarious.
Bernie Mac had me crying, son. But then I think she had another special that I saw on Netflix. I like stand-up comedy.
I do too.
No, we're not judging you, dog.
I watch a lot of stand-up comedy.
I watch a lot.
Me too.
Actually, what I used to do at Morgan Stanley, or what?
About to admit the stealing time.
No, when I was you listen to Pandora.
Yeah.
I would put Paul Mooney stations, Eddie Murphy stations, yo, stuff like that.
I love Paul Mooney.
Paul Mooney is my favorite.
A fucking legend.
Speaking of, she said, ask Paul Mooney about what Netflix is doing and he'll tell you. I was like, Paul Mooney's a legend.
Yeah.
Come on.
But Paul Mooney's also way too real for
Hollywood. Way too real. Like, he knows what's
Paul
up.
Paul Mooney says shit just to make white people walk out. That's his goal is to make you walk out.
I love listening to his shit because I was listening to his race, his little stand-up special from 1993.
Yep.
And some of the shit he's saying back then is just so relevant to things that's going on right now. And I'm like, damn, shit still ain't changed.
Some of the shit Malcolm X said. Yeah, 1964 is still relevant.
That's true.
Racism is something. It's probably never going to go away. It's something that's really ingrained. Because if you genuinely understand what racism is, it's literally, in my mind, I guess speaking for myself, it's survival. It's from a numerical standpoint, white people are the minority of the world. People of color are the majority. So how, like, people...
For the entire world.
Oh, okay. In Asia, in India alone, there's 2 billion. In Africa, there's billions of people out there. Mm-hmm. So it's the systematic thing. Racism is systematic. It's not, I don't like you because you're black. No, I'm not going to hire you because you're black. I'm not going to give you these loans because you're black. I'm not going to give you any of these opportunities for you to prosper because of this color of your skin. And that is a way to make sure you remain on top. That's a way to make sure that you survive, that your race and your people survive. So if you understand at the core that it's a survival technique, that shit ain't going anywhere anytime soon. It's just going to take different forms. It's just going to transform. No, it's like even with like when Donald Trump got elected, because I was a little excited. Like, I was a little like, oh, whoa. Yeah, I said it. I was a little relieved, to be honest, because under the, no disrespect to Barack Obama or Michelle Obama, but under the presidency of Barack Obama, black people especially fell under this false illusion of inclusion in which you thought racism was over because we got a black president. No, that shit just came way more inconspicuous. It became way more, ingrained into the system, which is what it is. So if Hillary Clinton got elected, then you would have had this false narrative that women are doing better. Or you would have had this false thought that America is becoming progressive, and America is getting rid of its racist, sexist, patriotical views, which is not true. Mm. Donald Trump is, in my opinion, and I'm only speaking for myself, is America, just without that mask. And that's the only thing that surprised me that he got elected, because America's been really good at hiding that mask. But when he stood up there and said, we got some bad hombres coming into the
nation. He said a lot of shit.
No, but when he said hombres to me, it was so powerful, because we ain't hiding it no more.
Yeah.
Hombres, you ain't talking about Russians. You ain't talking about English people. Racism. You talking about Mexican. You straight up talking about Hispanics, and you not hiding it.
Yeah.
You straight up saying we need to stop letting these people come in from these shithole countries, which was all African descent. And then he said we need to start allowing other people from, like, it was like Scandinavia or something like that, from, you know, European descent. Like, you literally say, like, stop letting...
Netherlands or something? It was like a specific one.
The countries that he was talking about was, we need to stop letting the black people in and let more white people.
White people.
Like, he's straight up saying it. So for me, it's like, I grew up in that type of environment. I grew up, my middle name is Elijah. I'm named after the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Like, that's what I grew up. That's the environment that I grew up in. I grew up being very racially conscious. For me, Donald Trump is like that, you smelling smoke when the fire has been burning the entire time.
Yeah.
You finally see the fire. Now you get a little burn.
That's true.
And it's it's crazy, and it's terrifying at the same time, because of what he does with other countries. The bridges that he burns, the fact that he pretty much got in like a gun war with North Korea, talking about my guns is bigger than yours. That's some nigga shit. What are you doing? That's what hood niggas do. When they say my guns go off, my shit go off too. What usually happens? Their guns go off. They talking about nuclear bombs. That's terrifying.
And they gonna get hit first too.
Listen.
Bomb go off, we all gonna fucking go. Listen, that's real.
But at the end of the day, the benefit. And I think Dave Chappelle said it in one of his stand-up, when he was talking about the benefit of that woman lying about Emmett Till. Like, it's a terrible, horrendous thing, but that event, that horrific event for Emmett Till, led to this domino effect of, like, progression for black people around that time. Mm-hmm. So this horrific election of this man, this terrible person, is, I think, leading to a lot of... I don't think Black Panther would be as successful if Donald Trump didn't get elected, because that need to feel like, that need to have that black pride wouldn't be as strong.
Mm-hmm.
Or movies like Get Out wouldn't resonate, or this Me Too movement, I don't even think would be as strong, which I think is amazing. But if Hillary Clinton would have been president, then people would have said, well, you got a woman president. It can't be that bad.
That shit makes no sense.
But now you got a president who says, I grab women by the pussy.
Mm-hmm.
So this Me Too thing makes a little bit more sense. So it's powerful, because he wakes you up to the shit that's been going on for centuries.
It's insane how easily fooled the average person is. Like, if you put something in front of someone and tell them to believe something, most people will believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I understand what you're saying about Barack Obama. Like, I was extremely excited to see Barack Obama, because I thought that imagery just in itself was very powerful to black men and black people as a whole. But I also understood that didn't mean that our lives were going to change because this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone would walk around with that false narrative and be like, oh, well, you know, like, basically, as you said, with the illusion of inclusion, we have a black president. Like, what's the issue? Where on the daily, that shit didn't change anything. Like, we still had the Mike Brown incident. We still had the Trayvon Martin incident. All these things that like, were still... at the forefront of black issues were still going on that happened before him and are going to continue to happen after him.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have Trump, who's just not even flagrant. He's just very, he's just himself.
He's just blunt. And
he's very blunt. And it's like,
that's how I prefer my racism, you know, straight up.
Right up. Yeah. Seriously, rather you smiling in my face and acting like, and then talking shit behind my back.
That stupid nigga.
Oh, yeah. Well, but it's just, friends. Yeah. But I think that, you know, having Trump right after Obama is like, just was like the dosage that everyone needed. Or everyone in the black community and like Hispanic minority community in general needed to see, like, yo, this is what America is. Yeah. Like, yeah, we gave you this little thing and you got excited about that, but this is who we are. Like, don't overlook this.
And I think the first jab at that was in my opinion, Trayvon Martin. I think the first jab, because everyone's under that false illusion of inclusion, you know, we have a black president and all this other stuff, and it's great, but that jab that this little boy was killed for wearing a hoodie, that jab of the narrative that went behind it, that's why you guys got to see 7 seconds. You got to see 7 seconds. It's fantastic. But that because they show the power of rhetoric. They show the power of, I'm going to call you a thug to justify your death.
That's all fucking time.
I always say roaches and dogs. I say the same thing. If you kill a roach, no one cares. You're supposed to kill a roach. They're bugs. They bring disease, all this other stuff. You kill a dog, everyone is mad at you. They're upset. They're heartbroken. They're both animals. But it's the association that you have with them, which determines how you feel about their deaths. So if I depict this boy as being a thug, as being a criminal, as being a larger than life monster that was coming at me and I was trying to protect my life, then in a way his death is justified. But just the justification of that boy's death and the fact that this man killed him and got away with it and was pretty much bragging about it was that first jab that, like, no, it's still here. Racism is still here. You can walk around in a suburban neighborhood, get killed. You can be attacked by someone, followed by someone, because it's some things you can't argue. The 911 operator told George Zimmerman, no, stay there. Don't follow him. He followed him. You get in a tussle with him. You defend yourself. You get killed, and that person still gets off.
Not shocking when they get off.
It got less and less and less and less and less shocking. It went from like, oh, really? To like, I hope he at least gets indicted. To like, yeah, of course he got lead in it. Like, it's, you get becoming numb to it because our lives are not valued. Yeah. We're not human. And from a societal standpoint, whenever I think of racism, I always think of Band-Aids. Because Band-Aids are supposed to be skin complexion. They're supposed to be skin tone. But if I put a Band-Aid on my skin, that shit ain't gonna fit me. Because I'm not the standard of what a human being is in America. And I think we're not the standard. We're substandard. So there's humans and then there's black humans. As long as we are not viewed as being human beings, then we will be treated as not human beings. And that is the annoying thing about it. And that's why we're getting shot down like dogs or being treated a certain way, because we're not human. And that's the justification for our mistreatment.
Damn. Listen, I can't look at Band-Aids the same again.
No, sir.
I didn't even thought about it.
It was like I did this paper in grad school where I was trying to compare the work stresses between white women and black women in the workplace. And it was so hard to find research for black women because they kept saying women. They kept saying women, 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 women. But when they said women, they meant white women. They didn't mean everyone. So like even when I was talking about like when I was researching the wage gap, you know, for every dollar that a man makes, a woman makes, at the time it was 76 cents. That was false because they were only talking about white men and white women. For every dollar a white man makes, black woman made 68 cents, while the white woman made 76 cents. For every dollar that the white man makes, the Hispanic woman made 58 cents. So women were the standard. But white women were considered human or considered the standard of being a person. But like our stories were often ignored or not addressed.
I got things to think about when I go home.
White women. Yeah. It's quite a somber note to go out on.
No, it's not.
No.
It's the right note to go out on.
Go watch 7 seconds.
I'm going to go watch that tonight.
And that note,
I'm going to watch that tonight because I'll be up.
And watch your poem on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, plug everything.
My apologies. So, you going to get my good side. my Instagram is Hungry for Art. HUNGREE, the number 4, art. Yeah, the link is in the bio. Go watch my poem. It's Hero versus Lois. I think it's dope. You're going to think it's dope. It's going to resonate with you. It's going to resonate with the person you're with. And it's for everybody. And more shit to come.
Yeah, just pray y'all don't break up over that shit.
Oh, well, I'm single. That's not my girlfriend.
No, not you.
Oh, well.
People watching this. Motherfuckers be watching it as a couple. Don't watch it.
Bring
that
camera back over here. Yeah, ladies, I'm single. So I need that. Just need to point that out. No.
Bring that camera back.
No, yeah. Hopefully y'all won't break up. Or
bring some realization.
Yeah, bring
y'all
a new level to your relationship. Like, you know. Like, nigga, is you really with me to save a mission?
Bitch, you using me for my cape. Oh, man. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
I appreciate
this it.
Was
been a real
tremendous
gem.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
This nigga said, I can't look at Band-Aids this time. I can't. I'm finna throw all them shits out.
Never use
them. Go in the medicine cabinet. Fuck out
of here. Take the cotton out, too.
Motherfuckers, where'd you get it from? My ancestors, that's who.
Oh, man. But as always, thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you for support. And make sure you guys go rate, share, subscribe. Check it out on, where we at? Damn. Kev got it. Stitcher,
Pippa, SoundCloud, Pippa, Google Play.
I think Apple Podcasts. We on iHeart?
I submitted us.
Look at that.
iHeart?
Kev out here playing. Yeah, I submitted us. Man, humble brag.
And we're doing full episodes on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we got a lot of dope guests lined up.
Yeah. So y'all just keep checking out the podcast. Keep listening. Make sure you check out the YouTube page. Kev puts in a lot of work putting them episodes up there full length. So if y'all don't want to just listen, y'all can watch, you know. Until next time, just cooling out.
Stay cool.
You cool, I'm cool. You cool, I'm cool. You cool, I'm cool. We cooling out. You cool, I'm cool. You cool, I'm cool. You cool, I'm cool. We cooling out.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.